the home of rock. mmhradio.co.uk.
Well, first off, thank you very much for taking the time to have a chat.
Thanks for having me.
The pleasure really is all mine, sir. Do you feel different when you're writing this one in comparison to the other ones? Does it feel like there's an extra level in there?
I think it's just an expanded version of the Beast in Black trademark style. It has all the basic things what we already did with the first and the second album. But it's just like a bit heavier and there are a bit more keyboards. But still, Yes. It's all the same nonetheless. It's good songs are always built on a melody and chord progression, like how a good melody and chord progression go with each other. Mm. And any song from any of the Beast in Black albums, if you pick one and just play it with acoustic guitar and sing the melody, you realize that, hey, they're all growing from the same soil, so to speak.
Okay, well, that fits. I must admit, I think it's especially on is it Midnight Rendezvous? the synths. I mean, there's always been an element of that sort of classic sort of 80s sound to the band, but that one, it just kicked in. I think 30 seconds in, I've haven't grinned so much at a song all year apart from that one. I'm not quite sure why, but it's really put a massive smile on my face. The synths in that one seem to just felt a lot larger than any of the other bits you've had before. I must be reading all the comments in the search, there's a lot of references to people sort of charting Blade Runner and Cyberpunk as being big influences on that particular track, and a particular 90s anime as well that I believe that apparently you're quite a fan of.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest influence, especially for Moonlight Rendezvous, was Armitage III. Mm. It's a cyberpunk anime from 1995. And also Battle Angel Alita, another cyberpunk anime from the 90s, was influencing that song lyric-wise and music video-wise. But Armitage III, the anime, and the film Blade Runner from 82 by Ridley Scott were like the two main influences for that. And yeah, like musically speaking, that song is special from having that really long intro with a big amount of keyboards in it. Mm. Like there's this theme that repeats four times, but each time it grows a bit bigger with the instrumentations.
Mm-hmm.
And it fits to the cyberpunk world, this kind of a dystopian vision that's there, you know, this neon city with lots of pollution and like dark stuff and artificial lights there. And it's kind of a backdrop for a story, so it's crucial to have that long intro with those sounds there. It fits to the story, but it also fits musically, even if you don't know the story or don't care about the lyrics or you don't want to watch the video. If you listen to the song just for musical reasons, it works. At least I think so. I hope so. And that's the approach for any piece of art. I mean, yes, for example, films, movies, it's all about like this perfect marriage between the picture and sound.
Yeah.
We want to have that same thing with this music video, but after all, we are still a band. We have to like make sure that the songs will work even without the visuals.
Yeah.
But the visuals only give extra value for the song.
Okay, yeah, I see what you mean.
Yeah, so it carefully thought through that the intro should work even if it's not for the music video. It should like give extra value in a musical sense. So it kind of builds up, and then after the intro, there's the main guitar riff that kicks in, and then the verse, silent verse, starts. So it's kind of a one, the first arc of the song.
I think having the access, the spoken word intro as well, the ladies' vocals sort of kick in as well, set the scene as well. It builds a wonderful atmosphere, and it is very, very, very effective. I think for me, I listen to a lot of synthwave as well as rock and heavy metal. So hearing those sorts of sounds is something that I was quite familiar with, and it reminded me of. Are you ever a band called Gunship in the UK?
I know Gunship. Yeah. They have some cool videos actually. I like
them. Don't they? the intro of Moonlight sort of had that same sort of vibe you get from Artemis and Percival, where it sort of feels. It's got like a nice sort of ominous sort of tone to it, and then the guitars added an extra sort of dimension to it. Yeah, very, very, very effective. Very effective. After listening to the rest of the record yesterday, which was a wonderful blast of energy, and I think that for me is the thing that really came across with the record, is well with the storytelling, the positive energy that came from the record came through overriding over everything else, and it was absolutely fantastic. I mean, it feels like a lot of this record that you've mentioned about visuals, I'm guessing an element of performance must have been taken into account with this, because it's such an energetic record. It's gonna explode live, surely.
First of all, thank you. I'm happy to hear it. You know, the music is always actually ready before any of the lyrics are, so it's important for us, for me as the composer of these songs, that they work musically. You know, even if a person doesn't know English language, he should be able to enjoy these, he or she should be able to enjoy these songs. That's how I think. But to me, a good song is something like that. It's universal. You don't need to know the spoken language, because music is itself like a magical language that everyone understands. Yeah. It either resonates in the listener or it doesn't. So I try to make sure that it does like resonate. And how I do that, I have to trust my own instinct. What resonates in me strongly, I can count on that most likely it will resonate in the other person, because we are not so different from each other when it comes to think how feelings are born. Just let me give you an example. If we see a car crash on the road, most of us, 99%, will react to it the same way, with a shock, that what, something horrible has happened.
Yeah.
So same with music. I kind of try to feel and sense, okay, what kind of energies and feelings I get from melodies and instrumentations and chord progressions and whatnot. And when I get the feeling that I want, yes, I trust that, okay, let's keep this with it. Probably 99% of the people will feel something similar close to that. So, yeah, and let's hope it works also live. It's always a different thing to, you know, do the studio magic and then the live magic.
I'm guessing what with the pandemic and such, like you guys, I imagine, haven't had much of a chance to test drive much of the material in front of people yet, have you?
Yeah, we haven't, and actually, we anyway never practiced the songs before tour. I mean, before recording, we don't play the songs together. We just like do the homework by ourselves. I send the song files to all the band members. They do their learn their parts, and then come to the studio and record one by one.
Oh.
So we ourselves even haven't played those songs. So it's all about just kind of, you know, I make this construction, kind of a plan, and then everyone does their part, and they have to trust me that I know what I'm doing, like putting one thing next to each other, and it turns out to sound something close to an album or something. But we usually play only just before the tour. We have like 1 week rehearsals. That's when we first time ever play together the new songs. Yeah, it will be interesting to see. First of all, how we ourselves gonna feel while playing for the first 1 or 2 days these new songs. And usually it's really stiff and like quite nervous, you know, you can't remember all the things, and because it has to become automatic, and then we have to do the choreography stuff, we have to plan those things, you know, small stuff like the synchronized guitar movements,
yeah,
like what Judas Priest does and now, or all that. We like that stuff, man.
It's all part of the show, isn't it? I think it's come across, as you point out, there's as much with the visual as it is with the music, and it can add an extra element. I think if you focus entirely just on one bit, you're leaving out another part. And when it comes to performing live, the music's good, happy days, but there's a difference, I think, between seeing a band playing and seeing a performance, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's always about the whole package, the wholeness.
Yeah.
Everything, all the elements you should try to make them complement each other, so they kind of support this bigger structure, a bigger kind of show, or like this whole machinery called Beast in Black. Visuals, music, and the chemistry between the band members, all these things are extremely important for us.
Yeah.
We want to make sure that we are always having the same kind of that we are on the same line level when it comes to quality standards areas.
I mean, you're all in different little bits of Europe, aren't you? I think there's three of you in Finland, one in Bulgaria, if I recall, and
Hungary,
that's it, sorry. The singer is Greek, isn't he? If I'm correct, is he still down in Greece, or has he moved up to where you guys are?
Well, he moved to Finland in 2019, in December.
Huh?
Yeah, but it used to be like three guys in Finland and two guys abroad. But now it's four guys in Finland and one guy in Hungary, our bass player.
When are you going to get him to move?
I don't know, maybe never, but at least it's only 2 hours flight, direct flight from Budapest to Helsinki.
Okay.
So it's like when I drive to my parents in the countryside here, it's like 1.5 hour drive by car. So if you think about it, flight from Budapest to Helsinki is just a little bit longer than my car drive to my parents here in Finland.
So obviously I'm guessing all the packages are all set. So for you guys, with the release and the such like, is around the corner, well, the 29th, so you know, there's physical and digital versions of it. I mean, do you guys put as much effort into the physical sort of packaging of the albums as much as the actual sonics of it all?
Like, whatever format is relevant in these days, we always put like full effort to those. You know, we want to make all the formats look and sound as good as they can.
Yeah.
And even though it's mostly digital nowadays, for younger bands like us, maybe there are some older bands which have like fans that, like, you know, 90% of the fans buy physical format of certain bands. But I think Beast in Black is one of those bands. Clearly, our fans buy mostly digital, but it doesn't mean that we don't care about the physical. We care equally as much about that. And, well, let's see how it turns out to be on 29th October. Like, that's when it can be like received, like people will get it home from the shops and web shops. I always think how many people will check out the booklet and read all the things that are written there, and like, you know, the thank you from the band members and the credits and the lyrics, like precisely and whatnot.
I mean, you're much more hands-on from looking at all of your credits and what you have done with regards to the construction of your records, and you're being so much more involved in it. Is that your way of sort of keeping control? Are the rest of the guys worried about the fact that you're the Don of the band? Do you think they worry about it?
Actually, I have a feeling that we have a kind of a good kind of a structure, like, and trust in each other. Like,
yes,
when we take care of our own duties, you know. Guys trust, apparently, that when we are like producing an album and writing songs, they trust, okay, I can deliver the material that is like acceptable, good enough. And when it, to me, like, I always trust the other guys that in their musicianship, that they, you know, do their homework properly, learning the stuff, and we always giving their best with the performance when they come to the studio or when we are together on stage.
And
especially when it comes to live shows and touring, it's about friendship. You know, you cannot really enjoy tours unless you really have this connection, like a friendship there.
Yeah.
And not just with the band, but also with the crew. And that's really important for us to kind of have the whole team there enjoying.
Yeah.
And so far, we've been really kind of blessed with that, that we have had great people around us working for us. And
yeah, I mean, the lineup of the band has been wonderfully stable. You know, I think it's only the drummer has changed, but everyone else is the same from day one, isn't it? Same sort of thing?
I hope the lineup never changes. You can never know what happens. Like, most of the bands will always go through lineup changes and so forth. Maybe it will happen in Beastin Black, I don't know, but I hope it doesn't, because at least I think all of us kind of grew already into this kind of Beastin Black family or something like that.
Yeah.
We kind of feel it's part of our lives, important part of our lives. And
you know, I think in a world of at times it can be a bit heavy going, we need energy and we need fun, and that's what your band provides. I think it does it absolutely brilliantly, really, really do.
Well, thank you very much. It actually means very much to me. That's what we are trying to do, you know, kind of the music is supposed to make you in like uplifted and feel the fun. But if you want to delve into something deeper, you can check out the lyrics and start to think on those lyrics, and topics can be really dark, actually. And even in really dark lyric, the musical part side of things can be really uplifting and powerful, empowering. The contrasts can be really strong, like, what the hell? How can the lyric be so dark, but the song is so like positive or uplifting? And I think it's a good mixture to serve escapism, especially in times, in this pandemic times, because I think people are all so fed up with this corona pandemic, and the last thing we wanted to do is to remind people about this pandemic with our music or videos. So that's why we thought, okay, we will not have any like anything to do with this ongoing situation in the world, because people have enough of that and struggles in their lives, and let them forget for everything while they listen to Beastin Black, if they can enjoy those and forget about the other stuff that is always there in their everyday life. And we are happy that if we could kind of give them that kind of a small breather.
Yes, I think a lot of us find escapism, especially in sci-fi, and there's you can really sort of disconnect yourself from everything that's going on in a decent sort of sci-fi story. You can lose yourself in it for days, months, people even years. Let's be honest, looking at Star Wars fans, they've been lost in that story for decades. Sadly, I'm one of them. I do love it, but I'm well aware of it. It used to be all about stories in the 70s and the 80s, but they seem to...
Exactly. It's great that you mentioned Star Wars. I really admire George Lucas, and essentially what Star Wars is, it's basically, you know, soap opera in space, but it's so cleverly done. Like, so, like, the backdrop, what he created for it is fascinating.
Yes.
Okay, you have this family drama, but it happens in this weird universe, weird creatures, space stuff, technology.
Yeah.
Jedi warriors, but essentially family drama.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. But actually, we don't think about it as family drama. When I was a kid, I never thought about, I'm watching a drama about family. I never thought about it. And it gives that emotional impact, because there's the connection, you know, father, son, brother, sister, and friendship and all that. It's there, and that's why it is approachable for us on an emotional level. But what makes it like interesting and fresh is that fantasy element. So it's a perfect marriage of those things, what was done in Star Wars, I think.
Album's out, 29th. Yeah. Looking forward to it. I can't wait for the rest of the world to get their ears around this wonderful thing. Closing the album out with a cover version. What inspired that one?
I know it's interesting. It sounds really like what? Like Manowar and Michael Jackson.
it was... Yeah, it was definitely completely took me by surprise, but yeah, no, amazing, lovely arrangement of it. It sounds stupidly huge and bombastic in the chorus. It's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I think it's all because a good song, in my opinion, and our opinion is, it's always the same thing. As I say in any interviews, it's the melody and the chord progression, and then you just put some kind of a beat behind it. Mm. Those are the main basic ingredients. Everything else is just arrangement, instrumentation, mixing, producing, and the choice of a singer and stuff like that. But if you really strip it down, like the Manowar song and the Michael Jackson song or any Beastie Black song, play them with acoustic guitar, sing the melody on top of it, you realize, wow, they are not so different. It's really like similar. It's about having this, you know, same type of like three or four chords and a catchy melody, especially in the chorus, and strong lyrics. That's about it. So that's why we chose those songs, because in our opinion they were great, like songs for what they are, not because we wanted to do something really like outrageous or really weird. No, it's simply because we're honestly like, I remember when Yannis first told me in some backstage in a European tour in 2019 that, hey, we should do cover of this Battle Hymn song. Because I was often listening to Manowar, like 1 hour before going on stage, I was listening to that and playing my guitar, warming up. And I guess all the guys grew so tired of it already, I think, anymore. But still, Yannis said one day, hey, what if you do a cover of this song? And instantly, I agreed that, hey, let's do it. Because I think we both were able to imagine that song as a Beast in Black version,
yeah,
but so easily, because Yannis is really musical singer. He isn't just a singer, but he's a super talented musician and a musical personality. And he heard the elements, same elements which I heard, which make a good song and which fits to Beast in Black style. And same thing with Michael Jackson song. Great, great ingredients to work on and to make it a Beast in Black version, and that's about it.
It definitely worked. I mean, how much attention do you pay to YouTube in comparison? I mean, there's always a lot of praise for Yannis kicking about in the comments in there. His range is absolutely fantastic. I assume, do you let him have a relative amount of control over his arrangements with his vocals?
I write all the melodies.
Is it?
Yeah, and that's because when I write the songs, it's about the wholeness. I cannot really work on a song and give it to the band members.
Okay.
Incomplete.
Yeah.
And the reason is simple. I always hear things really strong in my mind, like in my head. Like, okay, if something is off in a song, my mind automatically like senses it.
Okay.
I have to fix this rhythm here with the drums.
Yeah.
I have to do something with the vocal melody. Something is like clumsy in this melody or doesn't flow. So I cannot rest as long as I feel these imperfections in a song.
Yeah.
But Yannis does add to the vocal productions side of things.
Okay.
Even though the melodies are already completed and so forth.
Yeah.
Usually what he does is like he suggests some additional harmonies for a chorus or additional like unison octaves or unison vocals.
Okay.
To make the chorus sound a bit like fatter, a bit bigger with more voices. Like something to give something to complement the melody more, to make like bring more meat around the bones, so to speak.
Leaving Battle Beast and joining Beast in Black. Sonically, there are some similarities between the bands. Did you have like a Mustaine Hetfield thing where when you left, you're like, I'm going to do better than them sort of thing? It's always made me wonder whether there was an element of competition trying to out-beast the other Beast, if you see what I mean. Or has it just been like a friendly rivalry?
For me, I always try to do better I personally did earlier. Not only to do better what I did with the previous band, but even with Beast and Black, I have to like try to make things better with the next album. Not necessarily songwriting wise, because I don't want to sound like arrogant or cocky, you know, that. But I'm quite confident with the songs and the lyrics that I've written in the past. But the production, the mixing, the stuff like that, it's something that's more challenging for me, how to improve in those sectors.
Yeah.
I personally just focus on Beast in Black without trying to think on any kind of competition at all, expand.
Yeah.
To be honest, I'm so ambitious, and the whole band Beast in Black is so ambitious. So we kind of look there where, you know, Metallica is and the real big bands. We are like thinking, okay, that is where we're going. So those are the challengers for us. maybe that sounds a bit arrogant or like overly self-confident or something, but you know, it's just honestly, that's how we feel. We are so hungry in making this band as big as possible, but as long as the reasons, you know, are right, correct ones, you know, we always have to make, you know, create the art for the right reasons. If you feel that you need an output for something inside you that you cannot live without letting some story or song out, then you have to just do it. And while you do it, why not make the best out of it in also like a career way?
Yeah. So, well, yeah, you've got to enjoy the ride, haven't you, ultimately? And why shouldn't you aim for the top spots? I mean, who aims for the middle, you know?
Exactly. It's all or nothing kind of mentality. And I've always had that personally since I was a little kid. I kind of hated the thought of being not the best in something. And I know I'm not the best, but I always like, God damn it, I'm gonna...
You gotta try.
Trust myself, you know, I trust myself in some things. And I guess there's some kind of a... I don't like authorities.
Okay.
No one tells like, am I good enough for something or am I not good enough? I hate that when it comes from authorities or something or someone are not in the position or place who could actually judge. Difficult to explain, but it's just so much self-confidence in at least one thing in life for me, which is songwriting. I'm not good in many other things. I'm really bad at many, many things. And I'm not even trying to act that I'm good in those. But if there's one thing that I can like have peace with myself and say, I know when I'm good with something, but it still doesn't mean that if you go back to this album making, I trust the songs. When the album is ready, I cannot listen to it. Not confident about it almost at all. I don't know, will people like it or not? Because I've become so worn out, so burned out, so exhausted about it that I cannot really judge it anymore. And that's when you can feel really insecure about it. I have those moments with every album, but I just had to tell myself, hey, remember how you felt when you wrote those songs. Trust that feeling. Maybe you should just like trust that, and people will feel the same when they hear the songs for the first time. You have heard the songs like a million times, so that's why you feel bad about them, blah, blah, blah. I have to tell this myself every time with every album. Like,
Well, whatever it is you're telling yourself, it's working, dude. That's the important thing, it's working.
Of course, it's the best thing ever when people enjoy it. And like, when you get that feedback, when it's out of your own hands, the album, it is what it is. And it's so gratifying to notice that, hey, it wasn't for nothing. It seems like it had some kind of a meaning.
Yeah.
Even though I probably never will listen to this album ever entirely, but it's good to know that, okay, it's alive, it's gonna survive there in the outer world because people accept it. So I can feel already more at peace with focusing on the fourth album and put my whole energy into that one instead of thinking what will happen with the third one, will it survive, will people like it, because it seems like it's gonna be probably all right. So I'm happy because I can forget about it and think of the future.
So how quickly do you start thinking about the next step, the next record? Are you gonna do tour then record, or are you gonna be thinking record whilst touring?
No, usually the next album, the idea for the next album starts already at the end of the finalizing process of the current album. You know, when we were doing Dark Connection, I already had the kind of idea where I probably want to take the fourth album, like theme-wise, and already got through some songs that I went through for Dark Connection, but I had to leave them out. So some of those songs will probably end up being on the fourth album. And the reason why some songs are left out, it's not because they're worse than some other songs. It's difficult to explain. It's some kind of a just emotional thing, and sometimes it's hard to say how some songs like speak to you, how they resonate in you. They tell the reason on a non-verbal way why they cannot be on this album, but you save them. And you know that they're great, equally great songs in your own opinion as the ones that are on this album, but you cannot have those songs on this, so you save them for later. For example, with Battle Beast, I remember I wrote around the times of the debut album, Steel album, I wrote a song. It was 2010 or 2011. And ever since after that, that song has been ready and waiting for the light of the day. I thought, okay, it's gonna be the opener track for the self-titled album, Battle Beast album, that came in 2013. Well, it didn't end on that album because the opener track ended up being Let It Roar. Then I thought, okay, I'm gonna put it on the third album. Not the case. It was Lionheart was the opener track for that album. And okay, I just had the strong sense that that song that I had, it's an opener track, but always something else came. So then after the third Battle Beast album, my ways with the Battle Beast separated, comes Beast in Black. I thought again of that same song. It's gonna be a debut album. Nope. It's already, and now we're already on the third Beast in Black album, my career's sixth album. I still haven't been able to put that song on any album, even though it's completed, and I'm 100% like happy with the song, but it just doesn't somehow for the story or for some kind of a reason. Not because it's not good enough, but maybe on the fourth Beast in Black album it will be. Let's see. Maybe it won't be opener track anymore. Maybe I will change my mind about that. So it's kind of a controlled chaos, you know. There's stuff, but
do you prefer being a studio guy or a stage performing in front of people guy? Which one works for you?
Studio guy. I'm definitely a studio guy by far, but I can enjoy the live stuff as well. I've learned to enjoy it, like, over the years, and when we have a show, I honestly, like, I love it when I'm in a good condition. By that I mean that, unfortunately, I get ill like really often on tours, and it makes it really difficult to enjoy when you're really having this tonsillitis or like really bad cough, or you have fever. I always get sick on tours, and that is the biggest reason why I kind of don't always enjoy the tours, because of the health reasons, simply because of that. But the other thing on tour is that there's so much time that goes into waiting. I've even tried sometimes writing something on tour, but it doesn't work. I really need the peace and quiet and like be in my room.
Yeah.
Or having a like a solitude, you know, walking alone and maybe for a whole day, or driving somewhere in my car. But on tour you cannot do it. You have always like look at the clock. Okay, in a couple of hours I have to be doing the sound check, and then so you cannot really relax 100% and devote yourself to one thing alone, like a composer. That's why I think that tours, there's a lot of time that goes to waste. But the time when you're on stage, that's not the time that goes to waste. And that's why we give everything on stage. It's, you know, what would be the point of playing a show after you wait 10 or 15 hours, and if you go there on stage and like show how miserable you feel.
Yeah.
Better like make release all that kind of energy what you had, like the anticipation. Okay, we've waited the whole day. Let's make it worth it and play the show with full energy. And when we do that, and that's really, really enjoyable. As I said, unfortunately, the health reasons and this huge amount of waiting.
Thank you very much, Anton. It's been an absolute pleasure. It really, really has. I hope the album launch goes as amazingly as I think it should do. The album's an absolute cracker. I think anyone who comes into contact with it is going to walk away with a massive grin on their faces. It's a massive smile in a can. It's absolutely brilliant. It really is. Though you just didn't like it, please come play the UK. It'd be lovely to see you guys. It really, really would.
I'm sure we'll come to UK many, many times.
Like, happy days.
You know, pandemic is just like, it's temporary. Like, we learn to live and adapt to this COVID situation. Like, year after year, we'll get it under control better and better. And eventually, tours will come back and we'll be in UK and everywhere in the world. That's the plan, to kind of spread the Beast in Black name around the world.
The home of rock. MMHradio.co.uk.